Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today's runner is someone who spent years crawling over walls and carrying sandbags through Spartan obstacle races before he ever considered toeing the line of a full marathon. John built his entire running identity on the trails, and he even completed a 50K Spartan Ultra with his wife before the idea of 26.2 miles on the pavement ever crossed his mind. What's funny is that after everything he had already put his body through, the marathon was still the thing that scared him the most. So, he signed up for the San Francisco Marathon, trained on a little loop near his house, fueled by Uncrustables, and showed up to the start line with a lot of heart and more unknowns than he probably realized. What happened on that course is a story worth hearing. So, without further ado, let's jump into the episode. Please welcome John. John, thank you so much for coming on the show. Excited to have you on and break down your first marathon story. San Francisco Marathon, so a West Coast Marathon we get to talk about today. But before we kind of jump into all the details, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I've been following along for a hot minute now and definitely learned from other people as well. And so looking forward to sharing and learning, continuing learning from you guys as well as sharing my own story.
Yeah, I love it. Very cool. All right, sweet. Well, we start from the beginning. So let's talk about kind of where movement started for you, where running started for you. How did we kind of kick off this journey?
I think I've just when I first got out of college, I was working in video games, and it's a lot of crunch hours for that kind of stuff, you know, just like creative software stuff. So yeah. That got me into movement, not running yet, but I was doing like a lot of just hit videos at home. There was a whole craze of like P90X insanity videos, and I fell into that. And then I got into running because around like 2016, 2017, I signed up for my first half marathon. I signed up for a work 5K one time because my friends were just signed up for it and back in like 2012 maybe. And it was my first time ever doing anything like that. And I just felt like I died. But at the same time, it was like, I did not stop moving the entire time. Like I think I finished in like 33 to 35 minutes. And it was just like the first time I ever discovered, I didn't stop. That's kind of crazy. And then so that just turned into like, I can now do this as a workout. I can just throw in one or two of those. And then eventually I ran my first half marathon in 2016, which was a Disney half. It was super fun. And then 2017, I had a bit of a rough year in 2017. There was just like a relationship that fell apart. There was... my mom was diagnosed with cancer that year. That's when we found out. And I think running just sort of became more of like, this was my way to just get through the day. You know, when a lot of people talk about running in terms of like for mental health and stuff like that, that's when I really started to understand that because, you know, I think prior to that, admittedly, if I got work stressed in the day, I might even resort to like a quick drink or something like that. And then what started turning into was just running became that stress reliever of like at the end of the day, just like let that out of my system. And then after that, instead of continuing with that path, I actually started doing Spartan races. So I just signed up. I call it my eat, pray, love year. I was just like, I'm single. I'm going to do new things. And then I started signing up for these Spartan races. Bought trail shoes for the first time. I mean, actually, it was funny because when I first started being smart, they're trail races out in the farms and everything, out in the mountains. And I didn't know that there was such thing as trail shoes. I had no clue. So I'm just wearing just the bare minimum Nikes and I'm slipping and sliding in the mud and having a terrible time. But then I started just increasing the distances, started getting a little more geared up and starting being on trails. So my running journey really... for the first 6 years was all trails, essentially. I mean, I would still train on the road just because I didn't always live near a trail. And then I just started increasing the Spartan race distances. They have they start with the 5K, they have a 10K, a half marathon. And then they actually have an ultra distance. Met my wife and then we actually met through Spartan racing and then we started doing these races together. And then a side note, crazy side quest for her. We were doing a Spartan race and she broke her leg at one of them and broke her ankle. And so it was a big journey for her to kind of come back from that. And this was during like one of the harder Spartan races. And then what happened like in 2019, I think. And then we were just slowly starting to build her back up because she had told her PT, like, my goal isn't just to walk again. I want to be able to just like run these Spartan races again. So the doctor's like, all right, let's get you back in shape. And then 2022, we did our first ultra together, which was a 50K ultra, Spartan ultra. And we survived it. Like took us basically the whole day until sunup, sundown. Yeah. And then it's funny because after that, that's when I decided I'm going to try a marathon. At that time, a marathon seemed way more terrifying to me because it was the idea of like, you know, when you're on the trail, there's no pace pressure for me. Sure. I'm out there. I'm walking, we're hiking, I'm making friends, we're sharing snacks. It's great. It's a beautiful time. And then just with the marathon always seemed so intimidating to me because it was just like, oh, you know, I'll have my headphones in. It's just me and my thoughts and my music for 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, however long I'm going to take. I have no clue yet. Yeah. And so I've never followed like a proper training plan. I think the very first time I ran the half marathon, I basically followed the Nike Run Club. I just used one of those like in-app things. This was like pre-smartwatches. I still had a Fitbit. You know, I didn't know all this stuff even existed. I don't even know if that much had come out that time in like 2016. And so all I knew from basic training was I had put on enough miles training for an ultra, for the Spartan Ultra. And the only thing I knew was run a couple times a week and then once a weekend, just do a little bit longer. That's all I knew. Yeah, yeah. And I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know how long they should be. I didn't know anything about pacing. I didn't know anything about nutrition or fueling. So I was living in the Bay Area at the time, and at my little home, there's a small little, just like a walkway kind of garden pedestrian area right outside. The rest of the area wasn't messy, like super safe. So I just ran around this 1.5 mile loop. And I basically just would run for my long training runs. I figured, okay, I'll just increase my mileage. And every two laps, every 3 miles, I'll stop by my house. I'll chug some Gatorade. I'll eat an Uncrustables. And then I'll just keep running. And that was my only thing I knew. I didn't know anything about gels, anything about this or that. Because the only thing I was experienced with was still like trail racing or trail running. And so that's why I was like, Uncrustables and just snacks and candy. Yeah. That's what I was doing. So, and then San Francisco came and it's not the easiest first marathon for sure. Cause if you're familiar with the Bay Area, you know, you go you go down under the bridge to cross and then you go back up the bridge. And that's where all the elevation gain is. But being a person that came from trails, I was like, oh, cool. I'll just walk that. That's no big deal. I'm not going to stress out over trying to run this whole thing. And I think I was very, very happy with myself that day because I did not cramp, which was like a big game changer, because I think that is something that I've always suffered with and I'd always kind of experienced. Yeah. So I didn't really train for it traditionally, but I had very, very basic knowledge and I'd already built up a base, thankfully, from doing the Spartan race. Like the Spartan race ultra that I did was in March and then the SF marathon was in July. So I was just keeping up mileage at that point, running somewhere between 15 to 30 miles a week. And again, like now looking back after doing five, I'm like, oh, that was not enough mileage. But back then it was like, you know what? I didn't know. My goal was, I just want to survive. I just want to beat the cutoff time and get a medal and say that I did one. That's the only goal. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. It's like, it's really just knowing, can I do this? So there was a lot 100%. Of fear going into it, but that's what led up to the first marathon and I survived it. It was beautiful. And it was right as the world was coming out of COVID too. So it was like really exciting. Yeah. Like people were gathered outside and like, you know, we're getting electrolytes and we're just in this little crowd in like the San Francisco Embarcadero area. And so it was a really, really fun day, I think. And it was exciting. It was the craziest thing for me looking back was that scared me more than doing a 50 kilometer ultra, just because I knew it was going to be nonstop movement the whole time. Whereas like, I'm taking breaks for the trails.
Right. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. So quite the journey, but you had like some running experience from the Spartan races. I guess for the people that like, I think most people know what a Spartan race is, but for the people that don't understand the structure of what a Spartan is, you mind kind of walking through like the structure of the 50K that you ran?
Yeah. So essentially, it's trail race. So you're out there, it's a trail race and it's 50 kilometers. And the way that it works, basically, it's, you know, Spartan race is all about they have a lot of obstacles. So every couple miles, they'll have like either one or two or three obstacles and you kind of go through those and you continue on the trail. And the way that they set theirs up, they usually do it the same time as like other distance races. So you're really just doing like 2 to 3 loops of something. And then, you know, similar to other longer trails, they have like a drop bag type of system. So you go the night before, you get a bucket. They say you can drop off whatever you want. You get a bucket or a giant bag or whatever. So I think I went to Lowe's and I just bought one of those big water buckets. And I just stored a bunch of food in there. I over-prepared. And then, you know, I was just extra shoes, dry socks, Band-Aids, whatever, all the kind of food that I would need. And then in the middle, like maybe 17 miles in, they give you a transition point where you get to pick up your food and eat it and stuff like that. So yeah, it's about 32 miles of trails. And in between there, you're doing somewhere between around 60 or so obstacles. And the obstacles, you know, if you've seen Spartan races, they change their, some are upper body, some are lower body, some are a little bit more endurance, some are like, you know, farmer carry type stuff where you're carrying a bucket or a bag of sand somewhere, and some are like monkey bar type stuff. So it's a nice, like, versatile, diverse set of different types of movements. Some things you're going to be better at, some things you're not going to be as good at. Like, since I'm a little bit taller, like the monkey bar type stuff isn't as bad for me, thankfully. Or it's climbing the walls, I would say, actually isn't as bad for me. But like, you know, if someone's like 5'1", I have a distinct advantage over that, but it's way more rough. For example, trying to jump over an 8-foot wall when you're 5'1" is insane. And I commend athletes a lot. Yeah. It's funny, 'cause like I'm there with my wife, she's like 5'3" and I could literally just hop and reach the top, and she has to do a running start and everything. So kudos to her, but yeah, that's the basic structure. And then, whenever there's an uphill, I think, you know, I sort of learning over the years of like what level of incline and what level of fatigue am I going to actually jog this, or am I just hiking it now at this point?
Yeah, very cool. And what do you think it is? Because Spartan races are something like the trail running community in general, but also I know the Spartan community, it's just an awesome group of people. Like you were saying, it's a community feel. Everybody's there for each other. It's a lot of like conversation on the trail, just kind of like being there for each other. But what do you think it is for you that like drew you to that community originally?
I think so. The thing that drew me into it was really just the obstacles, because I came from the world of like HIIT classes. And I think growing up, I always just remember, I just always loved playing on the playground, the monkey bars, and I loved watching things like American Gladiator growing up. The idea of the race was really cool. And then I think I was always hesitant just because of the idea of mud. I'm always like lived in suburban city areas. So I was like, I don't want to get dirty. I want my car dirty. What am I going to do this? But then I get out there, and then my first run was a super, which is their 10K. And so they usually add a few extra miles, some magical Spartan miles, they call them. And then I just remember kind of going through it. And I remember just being at like maybe like an 8-foot wall, and you're supposed to climb over it somehow. And there's some people have certain techniques. Some people can just jump up and muscle over it. And I remember just absolutely, my legs were cooked. I was cramping. And so what happens is when you're already cramping and you're in that super fatigue state and you try to jump, your calf seize up. And I remember this very clear moment of just the everything in slow motion. I feel like a giant that can't, just lumbering, trying to reach up this tall wall. And I try to jump, my leg seize up, and I just fall over. And I'm just on the ground. And so many people came up and offered some kind of help. Some people were saying, oh, just step on my shoulder. I'm like, I'm heavy. I don't want to step on you.
Yeah,
it's so kind. Yeah, people were offering me gel packets, mustard packets, pickle juice, electrolytes. Everyone was so nice. And I think that made me always want to continue. And then I remember just like, I had done all these races alone. I never went with friends in the beginning. And then so getting out there, I got to meet all these great people. And I wasn't like super active on social media at the time or anything, so I wasn't keeping in touch with them, but I always knew that going to one of these races, I would make a new friend. And then when I started doing them more and more, I started seeing the same faces, and that was also really cool. And I remember so many moments of times when I would just be cramping and I pulled over to the side and I'm just like disappointed and I'm embarrassed because everyone can see me. But the best part also is like, there's a lot of in Northern California, especially, there's a large Filipino community. And there's sure. there's always like these Filipino like auntie and uncles that would they would see me cramping. And I remember so many of them just offering me mustard packets at the time. And just like they're so nice and there's this or that. Oh, you gotta just like slow down, do this. Let me stretch out your leg. Don't stop moving because you're cramping. Like try to walk through it, but don't go too fast, you know? And yeah, just like people are so nice out there. Especially, I mean, I would consider myself a back of the packer when it came to the Spartan races, especially in those early years. And just everyone was so nice because there was just this communal sense of, yeah, we're all struggling. But I mean, we're all here for friendship. And then I started doing like season passes and then I saw the even more the same faces all the time. And then it was even more community based. And just everyone was always so supportive. And I think I really liked that because then it when I became more experienced and I felt like I understood how the races worked and how obstacles worked, then I got to like pass that along. I would see people struggling over the wall. And I'm like, hey, step on my hands if you want. Like, I'll help you over. Like, I got an extra liquid IV for you. Go ahead. Take it. It's fine. Yeah. No worries. I got extras, you know. So I think that's what drew me to the community. Just people being so nice and welcoming and to a random stranger who just looked like he was suffering. And that's what kept me there. And then that's what I wanted to continue to pass on to the rest of the people there.
I love it. Yeah, the paying it forward. Like, of course, when you're receiving the love, it feels really good. But man, it feels really good when you get to a point where you get to pay it forward for other people too.
Yeah.
I think it's so full circle in those moments where you're like, man, I get to be that guy now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, cool. So you kind of talked about this a little bit, but what really was the inspiration behind wanting to run a road marathon? So you'd ran that 50K, you'd done trail racing for so long, but what was the turning point for you, do you think?
There was definitely a sense, there was a little bit of confidence knowing that like, oh, I just came from a 50K. Like clearly this is going to be possible for me. I think I knew subconsciously, but I think it was always like the word marathon or the idea of a marathon was always sort of like, it was the crowning achievement. It was like, you know, having only run a 5K in like the 10 years prior to that, this always seemed like the impossible thing. And like, even, you know, signing up for my first half marathon, I felt the same thing. And I always tell this to I never want to pressure people to run distances if they don't want to. But for me, like my motivating thing was always, this seems terrifying. So I want to try to overcome that. Signing up for my first half marathon was definitely like, it was one of those drinking decisions. Like, all right, let's take a few shots. Let's try to let's press the button. All right, purchase the ticket. Let's go for it. And then, you know, just doing it and realizing, oh, I ran 13.1 miles. That's crazy. And I think the same feeling for the full marathon. For me, it was the sense of fear and anxiety. And there are certain things where if I fear it, I'm drawn more towards it because I want to challenge myself because I know then after that, then I just know there's something good on the other side maybe, or I just want to know. I just want to know if I'm capable of it or not. And I think I've done a couple since then, but yeah, I think the first one was still the most terrifying because now I know I can survive. Now I know I'll finish. Right. It depends on what time I'm going to get and what the weather is going to be like and whatnot, if I'm going to cramp at all that day. But the first one of a new distance that you've never done is always a, will I survive feeling. So it's I think that's what drew me to it.
Yeah.
And just like the 26.2 miles is insane. Like I remember, you know how you feel after running your first half marathon and it's the feeling of I have to do that twice. I couldn't do this again today. That's crazy.
Right.
And obviously pacing strategies are different as you learn. But yeah, it was for me, it was really just drawn towards the idea of I don't know and I want to know if I can. I want to know if I can. And really what that means is I want to prove to myself that I can.
Yeah. Love it. And as you talked about training a little bit too, but as you were kind of working through training, running on the road, and like you said, with your thoughts, you and your headphones, like it's a much different experience than being out on the trails and training. So like, what were some of the tougher runs that you remember, or some of the, I guess, just the more memorable training runs through training for your first marathon?
I think it was, there was a couple that stand out. And it's really interesting that you asked that because I'm surprised I still remember the runs from my first marathon that I'm training for compared to any of the other ones that I've done. Like I might remember a long run here or there, but the first one was like, oh, this was the first time I ran 12 miles since the, my last like half marathon. So the longest training run, and this is not good advice, but the longest training run I did was 15 miles. I just didn't know like how long I should go for. I didn't know what I was trying to do. All I was doing was this should get longer every weekend. And so by the time I did 15 miles was definitely very memorable because I'm listening to just audiobooks, podcasts, and then switching to music sometimes because towards the back half, my legs are getting sluggish. So I need rhythm to keep up with it. And I remember just like every 30 to 40 minutes stopping by my house, chugging some drink and eating another Uncrustables and just keep on going. I think the monotony of that, because it was a 1.5 mile loop, which is mind numbing. I do not recommend it. I always recommend finding a route that's at least like 5 to 6 miles. That's what I do around my house now. So I always still use my home as a home base because I just, you know, it's easier, or I have a Walmart nearby. I can just go to their water fountain or something. I think it was my mind numbing running 1.5 mile loops around my house. And then I think I remember another training run, probably maybe 12 miles, some 10 to 12 miles sometime else. I was kind of running through my neighborhood. And I've always been very reliant on headphones, a very, very big headphone. The only time I didn't wear headphones was running during a Spartan race, like an actual race. Every other training run, I've always run with headphones. And I think that was the first time like I didn't charge it or my headphones died or something. And it's silly. Obviously, we should be, you know, we should be able to run without headphones and all this stuff. But being so reliant on it, or like being reliant on a watch, for example, when that turns off, it's kind of a shock. It's like you're running in 2 miles, yeah, 3 miles in
a loop.
Your battery shuts off. And you're like, I didn't plan ahead. And you kind of go through this shock moment. But then you realize, oh, no, I should be able to run without a watch. That's you know, we should be able to do that. We shouldn't be relying on that. And then headphones were gone and I just had my thoughts and then I was just running. And then I ran like 10 miles that day. I think 7 of them were without headphones. And it was the first time, looking back, it feels silly, but it was the first time I was like, oh, I'm a little tougher than I think. Okay, cool. You know, it's just running without music, but it was something that I realized I was so reliant on. So that was a very memorable training run. Cause it was those moments of me being like, oh, like, you know, I'm definitely in the camp of, you know, if you run, you're a runner. Don't worry about all that identity stuff, you know, no pace shaming. But I think back then it was one of those moments that I felt more like, oh, I'm running. I'm actually doing this, you know.
I was really proud
of myself. Yeah. And I think those moments were those times that made me more confident to continue the journey and say, I got a marathon in 2 months. I got to keep going. So,
yeah. And whether you knew it or not, like having that experience where your headphones die, like, man, be thankful that happened in training, not during the race, right? Like where you got to practice it instead of it throwing you for a loop, like when you're actually in the race. Because I think I've heard so many stories on this show and just like the people I speak to where that happens during the race. And man, can that really throw you off when you're in a race environment? So probably good that it happened in a training run.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I think I've always had like just low quality, cheaper headphones. And I actually, that does happen because I've always been a 5 to 6 hour person. So it will die after 5 hours. But you said, because I had sort of built up that small type of resilience, you know, of like, you know, you don't need to be relying on these things. You can make it the rest of the way with just your breathing and just remember your foot strike and stay consistent with your movement and stuff like that. So.
For sure. Yeah. Cool. And then, so 15 miles is where you peaked. I guess how did you feel after that 15 mile run? That was where the next long run you were going to do was the marathon. So what was kind of going through your head at the time?
I was tired. I was definitely still scared because I was thinking like, I probably didn't run enough. I didn't use Google to look up any sort of training plan. I didn't know that most plans will have you go anywhere from 16 to 20 for your first. But I was definitely worried, but I also, like, literally right after the run, the first couple of days after the run, it was just like, I'm too tired to be scared in a way because I'm so exhausted and I'm still recovering. I didn't pace myself properly on that run. And I think mentally it was just like, you know what? Like, as they say, the hay is in the barn and that's it. It's go time after this. So I think I gave myself 2 weeks to recover. and which was good enough for me at the time, I think. And it gave me a little bit of confidence, but I was still terrified because it was my first marathon. And I think the only thing the one thing I did kind of learn from that is I didn't properly fuel with any thing that I would fuel with during a race, because I was eating snacks. I was eating, because on the trails, it's a lot of like, you can eat whatever you want.
Yeah,
you can, if you're not running the trails, you know, you can eat like, I'm eating like those honey stinger wafers because they're like delicious troop waffle style. Like, you know, they're really tasty.
Yeah.
I'm eating gummy bears, Sour Patch Kids, whatever. And then I think about like a little bit after that run, like 1 week before the actual race, it just hit me like, I don't have any gels. What am I can't carry this stuff when I'm actually running because these are way heavier. And it's like, that's when I realized, oh, the value of gels is that they're more compact for this space. You can kind of shove them in a belt, running belt if you need to. So I think, you know, at least that 15 miles did teach me, like, oh, I probably need a little bit more nutrition, or I got to figure out, I got to think about how I'm going to carry race day nutrition as well. But yeah, it was a mix of feelings. It was confidence, but also still a bunch of lack of confidence and fear. But I mean, it was the unknown. It's my first one.
Yeah, it's always the unknown that really, really gets you for the first one for sure. So let's like fast forward a little closer to race day. So you had your 2 week taper where you let the legs rest a little bit. And then, you know, the days leading up, I guess, like walk us through the logistics of everything. Were you like staying in San Francisco for the marathon? Were you within driving distance? Like what was the couple days leading up like?
Oh, I lived in the Bay Area at the time. I was probably about an hour outside of the city. My wife is a big credit card points person, so she was able to find us a room really, really close by. So it was like a half mile walk to the start line.
Oh, perfect.
San Francisco is one of those marathons where it's big, but not so big where the logistics are really troublesome. Like there was a bunch of it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, leave the hotel, walk straight down there. And I think because I had done like other Spartan races or whatever, I had a bunch of those space blankets at home. So I have so many extras. So I'm just carrying one of those, going to the start line, and just crossing fingers. You know, who knows what's going to happen today? I have no clue, but we will see. And, I think, thankfully we got the hotel. Wasn't too bad. We got a late checkout too. So it was literally, we got to check out like at 4 p.m. the next day. We got some special
work.
It was like a special like credit card benefit or something. And so we even had like a post. I could just walk back there, which also walking half a mile after running 26 is impossible. Running to the start line, I was like, oh, this is a nice warm-up jog, half a mile. But walking back to the hotel was so miserable.
Oh, it feels like
every
miles,
block felt. But... Yeah, every block felt like another mile. Like, what are we doing? Can I just call an Uber? But I'm also kind of cheap, so I'm not going to waste $30 for a two-minute Uber ride. But yeah, logistically, I think, thankfully, we were in NorCal at the time, so it wasn't too bad. Everything was very, very easy. And also... I was looking obsessively looking at the weather because that's always something that we do. Look at race day and,
of course,
you know, California can be hit or miss. And it's one of those cities. Thankfully, I think San Francisco seems pretty consistent and pretty cool. Even end of July, which is one of the hottest times in Southern California. Like I would not want to run a race at that same time in LA, but in San Francisco at 5 a.m., it's nice and cool still. So, leading up to it, I think logistically, I didn't have too much to worry about because I had like bought some extra gels on Amazon. Whatever was cheap, I just like bought on sale. I didn't really plan ahead too much on that. I didn't have experience trying different gels. And I know a lot of people also, one thing I was thinking about, a lot of people say, you know, try nothing new on race day. I think there's like nuance to that rule because I know my stomach can be decently tough for a lot of things. So it's like, I don't need to try. I've had one of these before. I'm sure it doesn't make me sick. I'm fine. So I just bought whatever flavor was cheap on Amazon and then just stuffed those in a running belt. And that was my preparation really. And then one or two electrolyte packets just in case if I felt like I needed it for anything.
Cool. All right, sweet. Well, let's walk through the race. So you're at the start line, you got all your gels, you're all ready to go. Walk us through the first like half of the marathon.
When you're in that corral for the first time, it's terrifying. It's like, what is, it's about to start. And you're thinking like, I'm going to be continuing to do this for like 5-6. I don't know. I don't know at that time how long it's going to take me. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be a 4.5 hour person. I don't know if I'm going to be a 6 hour person, 7 hour person. Who knows? It's still dark and we get started, you know, someone singing the anthem, we get started. And the SF Marathon, shout out to the San Francisco Marathon, gorgeous views. Cause you get to run.
Yeah.
The first half of the marathon, you get to run sort of like along the northern coastline. So you run, through like a mission area, I think some like old shipping buildings. And then basically just along, not beach, but it's just like coastal area. And then you get to run across the bridge, which is just such a cool experience. So you're running across the Golden Gate Bridge. And I remember the wind was so insane that like I had to hold on to I took off my hat at that time. I was like, this hat's going to fall off. I'm not sure how much is open now, but I think they may have limited it to maybe just the sidewalk running path. But I think when I ran it, they actually had more. They blocked off part of the road, so of the bridge. So it was, you know, there weren't cars on it, at least on our side. It felt like very open. And I think it with the first half was so gorgeous because sun is barely coming up. The weather is perfect. It's still in the like the low 50s. It wasn't raining or anything. It might have been sprinkling a little bit, but it was like maybe a little misty and foggy. But that kept us cool at least, which is really nice. And then there's one part of the SF Marathon where after the first 7 miles or so, you cross the bridge. And then this is the crazy part where basically you have to come back to the other side of the bridge. But the only way to do that is you cannot cross the street. You can't like, you go this way, you can't cross anywhere. So they make you go down all the way to the sea level and then come all the way back up another hiking path, essentially.
Yeah.
So I think that in itself is a little over 1,000 feet of elevation gain.
Dang,
was crazy.
That's crazy.
I didn't expect that. Because in other races, that's kind of spread out over like rolling hills or maybe like a little here, like one block is up. But this was like all at like several hundred all at once. And this one, I was like, oh, like I am not going to stress myself out. I'm just going to walk this. We're not going to try. Yeah.
I mean, that's a crazy one to try to run. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's just like you're just running in loops and everything. So that was a little terrifying because at that point I'm like, okay, well, I think because I've done all the Spartan racing, like that amount of elevation to me is actually very low. But in the context of, oh, I'm going to be running the rest of this, that's different than like, oh, I can take walk breaks whenever I want. At least, I mean, you can still take walk breaks during a marathon. I would encourage anyone, if they ever feel like they need to, obviously they should. Great training methods, Jeff Galloway. But I think at the time, that wasn't in my head. It was more just like, I'm going to walk up this uphill because I don't know how the rest of it's going to be. So the first half, I definitely, it was nice. The weather was perfect and the adrenaline was good. And I think I just knew pace myself because I've done long races and I know that the second half is going to hurt a lot. And I think because I've done longer distances, that was my main thing of like, just take it really slow. So I think I was probably slow for me where, I mean, I was doing my long, slow training run space basically. But yeah, the views, beautiful. Weather was perfect. So I had nothing to complain about there. It was just the big hill that was crazy and unexpected. And then coming back the other side of the bridge. And then, and then that's basically the first half. That's the first 13 miles.
Cool. Yeah. So, and then body wise, like mentally, you're feeling good through the first half, would you say?
You know, surprisingly, I was. And I think that's what kind of like, that's what blew my mind. I was like, okay, I'm feeling okay. I'm not feeling too bad. I didn't understand pacing at all. I didn't know pace. I knew level of effort. I knew that I was going at like a 5 out of 10, a 6 out of 10 at most. And I was kind of just staying at that pace, whatever that was. And I was feeling good. I will say this was the time I started to learn something that new that I had never experienced in training or longer races before. Chafing was a new factor for me. Because San Francisco is chilly and it's cold. Yeah. And so the one thing that I had prepped for, because I had trained in the Bay Area, because that it is cold, is I got Band-Aids on the chesties. And then I had to put those there because I've definitely experienced some bad experiences there. But I did not experience the chafing in like the armpits, the groinal area, all that stuff, which makes sense because it's chilly and there's a lot of friction and there's hair in places and you got skin and it's rough and it's.
Yeah.
And I remember so thankfully because I didn't have any plan for that whatsoever. So right around 13 to 14 miles is when I started feeling some stinging in places. And this, I felt terrible, but like we were, I was so thankful that basically every other aid station, I would say, in San Francisco, and I think a lot of aid stations at the big city ones will also do this. They had jars of Vaseline. Not only did they have jars, they had disposable popsicle sticks for people to use.
And I'm like,
thank you so much. So I'm like, no shame. I'm getting in there, just scooping it up when I maybe like. You know, I was like, there's no porta potties nearby. We're just doing this. We're going for it. We're putting it where I need to put it, tossing it in the trash can. And so every aid station, I remember very clearly just like grabbing a scoop, like a big scoop, because I'm like, I need this. And yeah, just that. I think that was the biggest surprise for me because my muscles weren't cramping. I was fine. That was a big surprise. But the chafing happened a lot earlier than I expected. Because of such chilly, cold weather, I think. Not like, it wasn't even super cold. It was like mid-50s, which is perfect weather, I think, for a marathon. But I just didn't expect it that day. And that it happened earlier than I thought. And I remember thinking, I am not going to survive 2 to 3 hours more of this pain. So I need to figure this out now.
Yeah. Well, shout out to the aid stations. I do love when they have little things like that you're like, thank God somebody thought about this. Like, this is coming into touch. Well, cool. And then, I guess keep us rocking. What was the second half like?
So the second half of the marathon, you run a little bit more through the city of San Francisco. You get to run through, like, I think you get to run through Golden Gate Park and you run through some of like like Market Street. I don't know if I'm getting these street names right, but like H Street maybe. The Mission area. I remember that specifically because I've gone and gotten like late night burritos at a certain spot. It's like, oh, I remember this street. And San Francisco is really nice. It's nice views. The city part was cool because I think some of the city is a little bit more involved. It's not like one of the super, super big city ones. There's not a ton of crowd support necessarily, but there's a lot of people that when they live there, they're still into the community. So they come out, they support. So I'm out there, I'm grabbing orange slices, I'm grabbing donut holes just whenever I can at that point. That's when I started paying more attention to the people around me. Also, I think in general, whenever I'm running a race, and I'm sure that most people do this, you lock on to certain people because you're around them the whole time. You start noticing things about people around you. And I remember very clearly, people, in LA, you'll have a guy in a bear suit pass you. You have the people, everyone's in costumes or doing crazy things. I remember the first time I saw and it's still not even the craziest outfit I've seen, but there was a girl who ran ahead of me and she passed me and she was wearing flip-flops. Just no socks, just flip-flops running this marathon.
What in the world?
And I'm thinking like, that is crazy to me. That is crazy. Either you're very
That's
prepared
insane.
And you're very good at this, or you're not prepared at all and
or
your
this
toes
is gonna
are
be a
burning.
Bad day. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that was crazy to me. And then I think after that, I saw someone running barefoot and it just started blowing my mind because we're running in asphalt and this isn't even a hot area. Now that I've run like the LA marathon and people run barefoot on those hot streets, that's even crazier to me.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I remember just seeing all these people and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not like severely cramping where I need to stop yet, but I'm starting to feel that early onset cramps. I'm like, all right, just manage your pace a little bit, your effort, so that you're not pushing too hard. But I think, yeah, the whole time I was, because of how scared I was and having experienced bad Spartan races where I cramped and just had to walk the rest, or like, you know, my mile average turned into 40 minutes because I could barely move. I think I was very, very, very conservative with my effort, thinking, I just want to survive. I know the cutoff is 6.5 hours or so. I just want to survive that. So if I can be under there, that's fine. And I was doing really well on that time. So I thought, you know what? Cool. This is a 12.5, 13 minute pace. I will just chill on this. That's fine. Yeah. So that's the second half of the race went, was really just a lot of like, pull back, pull back, pull back, be conservative. And then the city is very hilly. but it's not like big hills. It's just like one block steep hill, you know, you know, San Francisco's like that.
Yeah.
And then I think as you get closer to the end, there's more and more city life. And so it's visually, it's also very, very, it's, there's a lot of variety, which is nice. You know, I think with San Francisco, you go immediately from those residential, like the Full House style, like those homes. I forget what the style is called. You're going through the Mission, which is like a lot of like art, independent artists, graffiti, a lot of beautiful buildings, almost has like a Berkeley feel to it. And then you are running towards like the financial district towards the end. And you see like, you're running through or like around Oracle Stadium, the baseball stadium. And now you're seeing the ocean and all that. And I think that's when just like the energy is really, really high, and because you're just, you're, all right, I'm like 3 miles away. I'm almost there at the finish. And this is my first time doing it. And this is my first time experiencing like the last like 6 miles, basically.
Yeah.
As you know, the numbers, the miles feel much longer at the end.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I'm ready for like, oh, I only got 3 miles left. That's a training run.
Right.
30 minutes later, it's like, oh, I have 2.9 miles left. What's happening?
What's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just, I shouldn't be paying attention to my watch, but I'm doing it. And I'm thinking like, I'm almost there. And it's the time drags on so slowly.
Yes.
But you see the people around you. And I think that's always the community thing. Like I'm not interacting with people the same way that I would a trail race or a Spartan race, but I think there's an mutual understanding. Like, I see you. All right, cool. I'm going to try to keep pace with you. Or like, I think something that I've always realized with road races, I kind of like, I pick someone at some parts of the race, and they're either my teammate or my nemesis. And there's just a person that I'm going to keep pace with or whatever. So I'll like lock into like one or two people. It's like, all right, if they don't slow down, then I don't slow down. And we just keep pushing through. And so that was my first time experiencing that of like, oh, there's no stopping at this point. I'm close enough where I can push a little bit harder through the cramps, because I don't care if I cramp at the end, but I just don't want to like stop moving right now. So I think towards the last couple of miles, it's like, all right, push a little bit. And I guess the ending of that course is so gorgeous, just running through the beautiful city and everything. And then finishing, I think it was just crossing the finish line for the first time, getting to 26.2 plus ish miles. You know, there's always some extra change because you're leaving and whatever. I think it was just this disbelief of like, did I really just finish that? And it's just this feeling of relief, of disbelief, very, very emotional. Just like, wow, this is crazy. A lot of people process it differently. But I think for me, it was just this giant weight that was just gone off my shoulder. Like, wow, I did that. It was very, very cool. My wife was waiting for me at the end. She saw me. And then it was, it's funny. Because you're running the whole time and you're pushing through all this pain and you're battling your mind of like what's possible. Because you, the last couple miles, you're thinking, normally during training, if I'm cramping this much or if I'm feeling this much pain, I would stop moving. But you know, this is the thing that you tried to push through before that you're training for. So you just push through that. And then the second you're done and then you stop moving and you cool down and you start taking pictures and you're grabbing your bananas and your protein shakes and your water, the walk back to the hotel was very miserable. Like I said, it was a half mile walk. And I think we had to stop somewhere. I think we started to stop at like a Yogurtland or something just to get some kind of food. Because at that point, my stomach felt like a bottomless pit. I was like, just give me anything, whatever recovery food you have. This disgusting protein shake, I will chug two of them. Please give me more. Give me those brown bananas. I don't care. I will eat whatever. I will chug four different electrolyte drinks. Because it was post-COVID, they kind of had a different setup. They had less like of a festival area at the end. And there was a very long line to get a race shirt. And I was like, this is going to be another 40 minutes before I even get my shirt. I don't want to do that at all. Yeah. So I'm waiting in line. The sun's out now. And I'm thinking, I don't want to stand anymore. And my wife is like, you know, I'll stay in line for you. And I'm like, no, I'll wait for you. I'll wait here. And then we're waiting in line. And then eventually someone comes up to us like, hey, what we're doing is we're offering, we'll just mail it to you. Just give us your name number, show us your medal, give us your bib number and all that stuff. And I'm like, thankfully, awesome,
yeah, nice.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So then we just got out of line. It's like, you know, just walk back to the hotel. And again, that half mile walk was just as hard, at least, or it felt harder than those last 2 to 3 miles running that I did. Because now my knees are hurting. Like, you know, the joint,
right.
The joint pain, the runner's knee is now settling in. And it's like, I can't, every step is a cramp. And then if I rest and I stop moving, then I start cramping again. But if I keep moving, worse. Then it hurts.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how the ending went. It was all mixed feelings. And it, you know, just a bunch of relief because you're on this emotional high, which is really, really nice. So, I mean, even though I'm complaining about the walk, obviously I was still just like top of the world. I felt unstoppable. And of course I'm like walking into yogurt land, I'm like hobbling in there, but like, you know, hey, I just
ran
the marathon.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. Like, yeah. Do you guys have discounts, by the way? Do you guys do anything here?
Do you know anything for marathoners? Because I'm one of those.
Yeah. That's awesome. But yeah, so that's how it ended. And yeah, it was a good day. And then I would say the next most memorable moment is getting back to the hotel and taking the first post-race shower, because then you feel everywhere that you chafed.
Chafing, and I was going to say, oh my gosh, it's the worst.
It was the most painful shower. And I still have tried to alleviate that problem. And like, you know, I've gotten better at it and prepping more Vaseline, whatever, and wearing better, like fitting clothing also.
Yeah.
Like tights and stuff. But sometimes it just happens because you're just pushing through and maybe you don't realize it. And maybe you don't even feel it, but it still happens. Some kind of burns or rubbing still happens. And that first post-race shower is always it's a surprise. It's such a surprise. And I remember like screaming audibly and my wife in the other room like, you okay in there? And that after that, then it was like, let's just order room service, whatever. Give me a burger. I don't care. All this stuff. Give me fries.
I'd like to
everything.
Be horizontal. Yeah. Give me food. And
yeah.
I'm
yeah. 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 And then, yeah. So yeah, that was the rest of the day, basically. That was the post-race.
Love
it. And just the recovery was just eating an impossible amount of food. Because I also looking back and having trained for more, I'm like, oh, I definitely didn't fuel enough during the race either.
Sure. Sure.
Which is a whole nother conversation. But it's but then at the rest of the day, I was like, I could not stop eating. I never felt full. It was such a great, crazy feeling. I just felt like, get me to a buffet right now because I could just sit there for the rest of the evening. That was the rest of it.
Well, love it. I mean, all in all, it sounds like it was a great experience. You were able to kind of like push through some of the trials and tribulations, of course, of a marathon, but like no major injuries, no major moments. Like it sounds like it was smooth and steady for the most part for you, which is like, that's all we can ask for in a marathon. Where we're going in with so much unknown and, you know, just so much that like we're trying to figure out as we go, you know what I mean? For a first marathon. So that's awesome. I'm glad it worked out that way.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
No, you're good. Go for it.
I was going to say, that's actually, for me, looking back, I think that in the few days after, I mean, I had like runner's knee, like that kind of that joint pain a little bit. But I mean, I had experienced that before. And I've learned that like you can also try to prevent that over with like better form and strength training and whatever, and just being better balanced overall. But I think for myself, I'm so thankful with that. I did no serious injuries. I paced myself well. I didn't have crazy cramps. I had a normal expected amount of cramps towards the end, but nothing that forced me to like, I have to sit down right now, which has happened at other races. So no, you're absolutely right. I think I was so grateful that like I survived it. I didn't push too hard. I mean, I pushed, it's still hard no matter what. But I didn't feel like I was dying at any point. And I was so thankful like I had no serious injuries or anything. So I think to me it was a nice it gave me a lot more confidence going into more of them in the future.
Totally. Love it. Well, cool. Well, we know that you caught the bug in some way because you've ran 4 marathons since then. But before we talk about kind of like what changed for you throughout those other marathons, always love to ask for a piece of advice to pay it forward, like we talked about, to some of the newer marathoners. So what kind of advice would you offer somebody who's maybe training for their first marathon right now?
If I think two pieces, I think it just depends on different people come in with different mindsets. You know, I think first timers, I try to think of actually maybe my first time even training for a half marathon, which I had a similar, more of, I didn't know what I was doing. So let me follow some kind of structure. following some kind of structure or a plan is highly, highly, highly recommended. I did not do that. And I went into this very not confident, but just thinking like, I trained for a half using an app. And I know the basic idea. Run a couple times a week, 3 to 4 times, and just run a little bit longer every Saturday or Sunday. That's the plan. That wasn't good. I think I definitely could have used more miles, more long, slow miles, or just more miles in general. But I think finding some kind of plan that works, that's just even beginner friendly, is very, and taking it seriously, really trying, like, not, don't think it's okay to skip one run a week. Like, really try to hit, I would say, 90 to 95% of the runs, just because mm-hmm. there's going to be one or two of them where you may want to skip a long run because maybe you have like a special occasion, or maybe you're feeling sick, or maybe, you know, something comes up emergency wise. You kind of got to plan for that buffer. So my first piece of advice that I would say is just like, follow a plan and take it seriously. And it's also, as you know, it's much more satisfying too, rewarding. That's where the sort of the cheesy phrase of, you know, it's the journey that matters. It's not the destination. It's not the marathon itself. It's the training and looking back and saying like, that was the reason I was able to do this. So I'm proud of myself for doing 3 months of this craziness. And I think if you don't follow a plan, or if you don't train hard really, or if you don't have consistent training, it's not as satisfying to finish the marathon, because the marathon itself is really, especially for a first timer, it's about that training journey, learning about what you need, figuring it out, tweaking your plans, and just like being consistent and looking week after week saying, I did 5 runs this week, or I did 4 runs this week. That's more than I could have ever imagined. Wherever you're running, or wherever you're, I don't know if I, depending on where you live, I mean, run clubs aren't necessarily accessible to everyone, but I would say running with a club for my second and future marathons, even if it was just once a week, I think really changed the game for me in terms of getting that motivation. Because when I was just training with myself for my first one, that's probably the reason why I only went up to 15 miles. I had no clue people were going up to 18 and 20 during their training. And the time I trained for my second one, that's when I realized, when I ran with the run club, it was a Long Beach Marathon, and they started training every Saturday morning. They would have these super long runs where they had aid stations set up, which was super nice. Mm, and I loved training with them because of that. And so you're sharing miles with people, which is one that's also really nice, because, you know, when you need the support, you have people there with you. But also I think it's the reminder of like, no, we're doing 20 today. And there's that social pressure of like, all right, we said we're going to do 20. Let's do 20. If I was by myself, I don't know if I would have actually done 20 or ever. I mean, I didn't. My first time, I just went up to 15, not thinking anything of it. I think that's good enough to survive. But yeah, I think following a training plan and like trying to hit at least, I'll say 90% of the runs minimum.
Yeah.
And then second thing is finding some kind of social accountability or social group, because it just, one, makes it a lot more bearable, and two, keeps you accountable.
Yeah, I love that. I think those are great pieces of advice, and something that's like actionable for a first time marathoner too. Like those are two really simple things to follow. So that I love. And you kind of touched on some of the things that you did different for your second marathon. But I guess if you're thinking about marathon 2, 3, 4, and 5, like what has been the difference maker for you? Like what has changed for you in your approach from first marathon to marathon since then?
I think since then I started incorporating speed work at least once a week.
Cool.
Now that's still something I haven't really figured out necessarily. So like I've done 5 and my best is about 5 hours. I'm still trying to get to like 4.5 eventually. And then eventually the long-term goal is to get to 4, which feels impossible. But I will keep trying. But I think I know, kind of reflecting back on my last marathon cycle, I really didn't put in a lot of tempo work or speed work. All those words seem foreign to me, especially at like the paces that I'm running. They just didn't really make sense. You know, I'm reading these online training plans and they're saying, oh, run this at your 5K effort. And I'm thinking, I don't run 5K, so I don't know what my 5K effort is. I don't know what that means.
Right.
But doing a little bit more research and trying to read a little bit more, and then just understand, I always now think of RPE, like rate of perceived effort. I think that is something that, okay, this makes sense to me, because I can I don't race 5Ks or 10Ks all the time, so I don't know what that looks like for me. But if you told me, like, run at a 7 out of 10, cool, I can figure that out. So I think I started incorporating that, and that helped me a little bit. But I would say what was interesting is I learned the lessons from my first one. I didn't learn them until my third marathon, because my second marathon, I got a little too cocky, basically thinking like, oh, I could survive the first one. I can survive another one. My second marathon went terribly because the first one I did at about 5:27, I think it was, or 5:25. And then my second marathon, I did right under 6 hours. It was flatter. It was in Long Beach. And the longest run I did for that one was 12 miles. And I probably trained maybe 2 months for it, because in my head, I was like, I can survive. It'll be fine. I survived. That was fine. But I was very disappointed. And this is when I realized it was so satisfying, even the first one, even if it wasn't following like a structured plan, I still kept up with it for like 3 months straight. This one was like 6 to 8 weeks. I just got a little too comfortable with myself. I thought, I'll figure it out. Whatever, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And that was not fun. It did not make it fun at all. And then so I incorporated that into the third one and really realized, oh, I'm going to try for this one now. And then my third one, that was, I did Long Beach the year after, and I had gone from 5:55 to 5 flat. And that was like a big improvement. That was like my first time I felt like, okay, I think I understand what I'm doing now. I think I'm understanding like how to structure a training plan and like what's the right amount of speed work for me, how to, you know, properly do things. So that was really, really nice and satisfying for me. So it's basically since then, I think the biggest things that have changed is I think I'm one, just really just sticking to the plan as much as possible, but I'm still trying to figure out speed work. And then I'm also still trying to figure out where to fit in strength training. I used to do a lot of strength training for Spartan races. And I think that was a big part of my, like, I loved, you know, I wasn't necessarily like a big power lifter or anything, but I like doing barbell squats and bench press and all this stuff. But that's really kind of just like took a back seat because of marathon training. It's just like, I'm running 5 miles today. I have no energy to do anything else. But then I'm you know, it's all the people doing all the hybrid stuff. And they're like, I ran track in the morning and now I'm lifting heavy in the evening. I'm like, I'm not about that. I can't, you know, maybe once in a while, but like, I got other things to do.
Not consistent.
I don't have time for that. Yeah. But I mean, I do see the value of it. Obviously those are the people who are going to see improvement because they are putting in that time. Not to say that everyone has to like make that time. It's just understanding the context of like, what can you do with the time that you have with the schedule that you have? So I think for me, it's really just been one, I've learned to, you know, follow the plan and be serious about it. And like I said, the third and fourth marathon, that's what I really kind of took away from my first marathon. And I was a lot better at it. And then just taking the training a little more seriously each time. I think just like, I think also as I'm running more and running more, it's running is getting easier in the sense of like I know it's going to suck, but like compared to before, it doesn't suck as much. It's not painful because I also know that like, it's not shameful to run 12 minute miles on a random week morning. Yeah. You know, it's not shameful to run 15 minute miles, take walking breaks if I need to. Like, you know, I used to think, oh, everything needs to be 10 minute miles. And I was like, no, I should never be running that pace. I should rarely be running that pace actually at my level at like my skill level. So yeah, I think it's just like the slow, consistent improvement. I don't think I'm going to make like big leaps, but I'm just going to keep chipping away at it. And if I can shave 5 to 10 minutes off each time, I'll be really happy with that.
I love that. Yeah. It's like, I kind of went through a similar journey where it feels like maturing as a runner. You're like, I'm maturing. I'm understanding like that these are small incremental changes and like the wins aren't the big leaps that you make. Like the big leaps come from, like you said, like the consistent effort over a really long period of time. It's never, there's no like overnight click where something's, you're going to shave an hour off of your marathon all of a sudden. It's these like these choices that we make, these really slow incremental changes. And if you just stick to it for a long enough period of time, like the results are going to come. You just have to be a little patient. So yeah, I love that a lot.
100%. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, sweet. Well, I'll wrap us up here with some of our fun questions. So we'll talk about fuel and shoes. Anytime we talk about fuel and shoes, I always give the disclaimer that everybody is different. Please try anything and everything when it comes to fuel and find out what's best for you. Same thing with shoes. Go to your local running store, get your feet measured, do what you got to do to find out what's best for you. But for you, John, what have you liked for fuel over time?
Ooh, it's changed a lot. So I think, you know, I used to be, like I said, I'm pretty, I just look for deals and stuff. So I originally just bought a bunch of stuff on Amazon that was on sale. And I regret that because those flavors are literally still sitting in my pantry. So what I've learned is anything, when it comes to ice cream, I absolutely love like the earthy, milky, creamy flavors, vanillas, like hazelnut, coffee. I love all those. And I thought I would like that in a gel. Terrible, terrible choice. Because when those things, when the vanilla flavored thing, goo packet was sitting attached to my body and getting warm for like 3 hours, it tastes gross. So, So I actually met this couple. They started this new jelly brand actually called Pow Labs. And it's basically like Asian flavored jellies. And it's kind of like those little like kind of like lychee or matcha green tea. So I think finding interesting flavors to me is more important because I'm not, you know, a person 3, 4, 2.5 hour. Getting precision, Morton, all those things just aren't as appealing to me because I'm not trying to maximize grams. I'm trying to maximize fun and enjoyment. So flavor is super important. So I have found like different fruit flavors. The Pow Labs I like. And then, or what's the other one that I really like? The Honey Stinger. They're gummies.
Those are great.
The texture is always really good because it's like there's certain like gummy bears, the Haribo gummy bears. Like I like those during long runs, but during an actual race or run, like they're a little too chewy to be going for it. But the Honey Stinger have a really nice consistency where it's like it's chewable, but I won't choke on this. So those, I think, fuel wise are super fun. And then long training runs, if you're not trying to get in speed, do not underestimate the power of a good bag of candy or Uncrustables. Yeah. Like, I literally just refilled because I got a 50K coming up and I just refilled on frozen Uncrustables that I'm going to be using tomorrow on my long run. It's going to be great. So that's that. And then shoe wise, I have been recently finding I've been on a hunt for deals recently. So I just found at Ross, I found some like cheap running shoes, some Adidas. And so I think for me, like I'll find shoes to kind of fit in the rotation just because I don't want to burn one pair out. But I actually got my first decent pair of running shoes as part of the LA Marathon Ambassador program. And we got to pick a pair of ASICs because that's their like title partner. Cool. Yeah. And then I got the Gel Nimbus. And so for context, I wear size 13 shoes. It's hard to find the larger sizes sometimes that fit. And also like I have some brands for me are a little too narrow. Like Nike and Adidas are too narrow for me. I have flatter feet. I don't need wide in every brand, but I think with the Gel Nimbus, I love those shoes so much because they are like the most maximum of cushion you could possibly imagine. And as someone whose training runs were any long, this slow runs were anywhere from 11 to 13 minute miles, that was a game changer. Like my long runs on Saturday, Sunday mornings are like 4 hours on those shoes. They made it much more bearable. So also 200 pounds, like that's, you know, I got a lot of weight. I'm crushing down on all these shoes. So I think having that sort of like, I guess they call it maximal or maximum cushion. That's my shoe shout out. I think those guys saved my ankles in many. But again, like you said, everyone's different. Everyone's got to go try it out. Go to a running store. My big recommendation for shoes, though, I know there are a lot of good running shoe stores, and I think they should support them as much as possible. But if you are trying to save a buck, go to the running shoe store, get fitted. And then if you are trying to support them, if you can, but also you can also just take those shoes and look online and see if you can find a sale. Not worry, like, buy the year before. If the Gel Nimbus 27 just came out, look for 25s and 26s.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Good point.
Secondhand shoes on eBay that have been lightly used, they have pictures on it and it look fine. Just as long as the bottom is not worn out, I don't care how dirty the top is. Like I can clean it myself. No big deal.
Yeah.
So I think, don't be afraid to look online for some deals. And
that's a great tip.
You shoes are plenty of people just wear them a couple times, don't like them. Try to sell them online.
No, that's a great tip. I love that tip a lot. Yeah. Just save some coin. Why not? The shoes are shoes. You know what I mean? As long as you got what works best for you. Well, cool. Well, thank you again for coming on and walking us through your story. I know you just said you have a 50K that you're training for right now. You want to talk to us about kind of what's coming up next for you?
50K. It's with SoCal Trail. It's Pacifico Ultra, and since I just did the LA Marathon, I knew I had already had to put the mileage in. So I'm recently just putting on, just trying to get some elevation, trying to run some hills. But yeah, it's my first 50K, my first traditional trail 50K that's not like obstacle ridden. Right. So I think this will be interesting. It'll be fun. I'm going into it maybe with a little, not like a lot of confidence, but an understanding that like I've survived a 50K obstacle race before. I can probably survive a 50K trail race. I did pick one with a lot of elevation. There's 5,300 feet of elevation gain. So I'm a little nervous about that. The other day I wore my old trail shoes and I haven't worn these in like 2 years. And I wore them out for like a long short 15-mile trail run. One of my toenails is fully just scabbed up underneath.
Oh, no.
So it was swollen for a while. So I've actually been on the hunt the last 2 weeks of like buying online different trail shoes to see what fits, see what's not going to like destroy my toes, better sizes. Cause when I bought shoes way back then, I bought everything at 11.5. I had no clue what I was doing. Now I know that I'm a size 13. So I'm buying all the right shoes. So I got some coming in on Monday that I'm going to try on. I got about 3 weeks. I got to hurry up. I got to break them in too. So I'm a little nervous about that.
Yeah.
But right now it's just putting in longer miles, no speed work whatsoever. Maybe just jogging up a few hills once in a while. But my goal is to survive and have some fun, get back, meet some folks in the trail community, in the local trail community. And so my goal is seriously to have fun. That's why I bought, like I said, got Uncrustables in the freezer now. We're just going to have fun.
Love it. Very fun. Well, cool. Well, looking forward to seeing how that works out for you. And if anybody wants to follow along with you in your journey, where can they find you?
I'm on Instagram as JHWANG, Jay Huang. That's my name. I'm also on TikTok as Huang Smiles. That's mainly on Instagram primarily.
Amazing. Cool. Well, I'll link everything in the show notes as well. But John, thank you so much for coming on and telling your story. This was awesome.
Thank you. I love chatting with you. It was very fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the My First Marathon Podcast. For more stories, tips, and resources, head to myfirstmarathonpodcast.com. And if you want access to bonus episodes, exclusive resources, and extra support for your training, make sure you check out the community at myfirstmarathonpodcast.com/exclusives. You can also follow along with us on socials, Instagram and TikTok. That's at myfirstmarathonpod. If you want to follow along with my personal journey, that's at k.says. Whether you're training, recovering, or just thinking about signing up, you belong here. I'm so excited that you're here, and we'll see you on the next one.